This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. To create your own space, visit squarespace.com and save 10% by using offer code TREK8. And also by TrekFan. It's not just a fan club, it's an adventure. You'll explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. Don't miss out. Help move us toward the Star Trek future by visiting TrekFan.org. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit Trek.fm/donate to get our new alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me once again, as he is every week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Now, Matthew, you know, usually you have a kind of a gray streak in your hair, usually got a little bit of facial hair going, but today you're cleanly shaved, and you look like you're about 12 years old. What's going on here?
Chris, I don't know who you're talking to, but I don't really know that person. I'm David. I think you might be talking about that other guy from that other universe, Matthew, but I don't really know him. I use my middle name, so I don't know what you're talking about.
I guess so. I just had a feeling that I hosted a show with you, but I guess not. It must have been another lifetime.
Yes.
In another reality.
That or... Have you been universe hopping lately? That could be. I mean, I feel like maybe. Have you stepped into a trans-dimensional transporter or multiphasic?
I did step into a really weird transporter. Yeah.
Okay. That's probably. I think that you may think that you're in your universe, but you may be in what some affectionately call the mirror universe.
Oh, this explains why everyone around me is so sexy.
Exactly. Yeah. The mirror universe is a lot sexier. I don't know why. Maybe we just don't have all the hang-ups that you guys do in your prime universe.
I guess so. You know, James L. Conway, who was a director on DS9, did a lot of these episodes in the mirror universe, said that it's dark and sexy and there's no subtlety over there.
Exactly.
That's how he described the mirror universe. And so that's what we're going to talk about today, is the mirror universe as portrayed on Deep Space Nine. And I thought this would be a fun topic, Matthew. We did this a long time ago in the Ready Room. And now that we actually have a DS9 show, I thought it would be nice to explore the side of DS9. And To do that, to kick us off, what I thought would be even more fun, Matthew, is I have a little bit of trivia for you.
Okay.
I'm going to quiz you about DS9's mirror universe. So are you ready?
Ready.
All right. So my first question, who is the only character to appear in all five DS9 episodes set in the mirror universe?
From the prime universe or from...
Either one. There's one character.
Hmm. Oh, goodness. I'm going to say Kira.
You're very close.
The Intendant?
The Intendant.
Okay,
yes,
yeah. You said it was one or the other, so I Kira, the Intendant, they're the same person, so...
Well, the Intendant is a lot sexier, though.
Yeah, she's a little bit more free with herself. She's unencumbered by, you know... In fact, I like the way Nanon Visitor put it, that the Intendant is Kira, exactly. She's just completely sold out for herself, other than Bajor.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I thought that summed it up pretty well. Next question. Okay, so the attendants in all the episodes. There's one character that was only in one episode, and that was Jake. What is the only Mirror Universe episode in which Jake appears?
The only Mirror episode that Jake is in is Shattered Mirror.
Shattered Mirror, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to clap there.
It only appears in that where Jennifer comes over, right? Sisko brings Jennifer over for a little bit. Now, why isn't Jake in the other episodes?
That is interesting. Why isn't Jake a part of the Mirror Universe? Like, what is Jake?
He was never born there.
I guess that's true. That's too bad. Yeah. Even though, you know, Jennifer and Benjamin were together, so I am surprised that they didn't have them have, like, some sort of, like, love child or something, or, you know.
Well,
that would have been interesting.
I imagine that Star Trek Deep Space Nine fans in the Mirror Universe, they can't complain about Jake being a useless character on their show.
You know, this is really true. I mean, we differ on how we feel about Jake, but I feel like in the Mirror Universe, he would have been pretty cool. You know, he would probably been like kick-ass, you know? I mean, yeah. He would have carried around like combat phasers and, you know, wore a headband. And yeah, I feel like...
Is that your definition of kick-ass, wearing headbands?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so here's another one for you. In the Mirror Universe, Quark's family has really bad luck. Quark dies, Rom dies, Nog dies. How do each of them die?
They all get shot, don't they? They all get shot.
Who killed Quark?
Oh, gosh. Was it the Intendant?
Yeah. And the Intendant killed Rom in Through the Looking Glass. And then Nog also gets shot by the Intendant. So bad, bad luck for the Ferengi family there. Okay, now here's a racy question for you, Matthew. We're going to spice things up here a little bit. How many times does Sisko have sex in Through the Looking Glass?
Three? Well, because I say that he has sex with the Intendant off screen, but there's some funny business going on there. But he has it with Janzia. Then he has it with Jennifer, and I say that he also has it with the Intendant, so...
Ah, yeah, he did, yeah, with the Intendant, yeah, yeah. I was going to say two, Dax and the Intendant, but also Jennifer, huh?
Yeah, I think they do some funny business, too, so...
You think so?
Yeah, okay. I think that happens as well. I think that Sisko got... I mean, he went to that universe, he was like, it's been a while, I've always wanted to sleep with Dax, here we go, you know... my wife is dead, so I get to sleep with her again. That's great. And I've always wanted to sleep with Kira. So, he's living every man's fantasy, I guess.
The weirdest part, and thankfully this was cut out of the episode, was the part near the climax where he yells, "Old man!"
How dare you say that, Chris, after I take a drink of water and I have to put my hand over my mouth not to have water go all over this equipment that we have set up. Goodness, man. Ugh.
Oh, man. Boy, the stuff that happens in the Mirror Universe.
It stays in the Mirror Universe.
Exactly. It might be cliche to say it, but what happens in the Mirror Universe stays in the Mirror Universe. That's at least how Sisko operates. All right. Okay, so, well, that's our trivia, our Mirror Universe trivia. That was kind of fun. So let's talk about the Mirror Universe a little bit more, Matthew. And on a serious note here, we've talked about this before. I don't remember what we were discussing, but the fact that DS9 looked at TOS and picks up... DS9 likes to pick up threads from the original series and flesh them out. You know, we saw that with Klingons, with Blood Oath. We've seen it with Trials and Tribulations. And other elements that, and here they do it with the Mirror Universe, and they take the events of Mirror Mirror, and they extrapolate what happened after that, and then they build their own little world around it.
Well, and that's what's so cool about this, Chris, is just the fact that Deep Space Nine cares about the original series. It makes it important by picking up those threads and saying, This came before, you know, and I think it was one of the detriments of the Next Generation of Gene Roddenberry saying that they weren't going to look to the original series. They were going to do their own thing. And I think in some ways it hurt what TNG could have been by not allowing it to use some of those things. You don't have to pull all the time, and DS9 definitely doesn't do that. But when it does, I think it's doing it really well. And I think DS9 pulled out just the right storyline to give itself some levity. You know, everybody complains sometimes that they think DS9 is not funny, it's not light or humorous, and pretty much every single one of these episodes is just a riot and really enjoyable. And so the Mirror Universe really sets a great tone of levity for Deep Space Nine and its characters.
Yeah, and not necessarily a riot as in it's a comedy, but it's just like a really fun take on the characters, right? And a fun take on what could be in that situation. And then it does have its haha funny moments as well. And, you know, I mean, I think Gene Roddenberry's choice to try to differentiate TNG from the original series by not picking up threads from TOS too much was a smart move when developing TNG, because it could have become a very cliched show that's just kind of mimicking what came before it. But as TNG went on further and further, I think they could have maybe paid homage to TOS a few times and picked up threads the way that DS9 does here, and it would have been fine. You know, there was a very good TNG novel by Diane Twain called Dark Mirror, which did set the TNG crew in the Mirror Universe. So even though we didn't get a Mirror Universe episode on TNG itself, we do have that story there. And actually, Worf appears in the Mirror Universe in that book, which we don't get to see Worf in the Mirror Universe here on DS9, of course, until Shattered Mirror in season 4, because he wasn't around. He was actually supposed to be in Crossover as Worf, which was interesting, but they were shooting TNG still, because that was second season DS9. He couldn't be in there.
Well, and that would have been really cool to have him be in Crossover. I think that would have been an awesome idea. In fact, I would have loved to have seen more of that happen. I mean, because Tuvok shows up as well, and which is a really fun surprise to get. So I don't know why they wouldn't have allowed more of the characters to kind of do that. Because, oh man, can you imagine if, you mean, that the Mirror Universe was the way that you could do TNG, Voyager, Deep Space Nine crossovers without having to really explain anything? You know, you just run into Picard or what? I mean, it just would have been fantastic to have something like that happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it does work. Having Tuvok on that episode works just because it's completely plausible that in the Mirror Universe, he might be with this group, because the Voyager didn't get lost in the Delta Quadrant in the Mirror Universe. Or maybe he was never assigned Voyager or whatever. He's just there with this group. And so, yeah, it worked and it would be fun. So with Crossover, the original title of that episode was going to be Detour, which makes sense considering what happens and how they end up in the Mirror Universe here. But I thought it was interesting, the take that they put on the events of Mirror Mirror, where Kirk kind of weakening Spock in a way with good intentions in Mirror Mirror, but it ultimately ends up in the fall of the Mirror Universe equivalent of the Federation, the Terran Empire. They become a little bit more pacifist, they become weak, and ultimately they get overthrown and humans become slaves. And I thought that was a cool take on it, because it shows that, again, even with the best intentions, there can be consequences. And you might go in and you might think, yes, peace is the way. Well, we all want peace, but you have to balance pacifism with the pursuit of peace. And they're not necessarily equivalent things. And by setting the Terran Empire for a fall, you know, they base this on the fall of the Roman Empire, the Chinese dynasty, you know, every great empire falls at some point. It made great sense, and I thought it was very DS9, again, to put that spin on it.
Well, and I thought it was interesting, too, that they were talking about the writers that the Terran Empire exists because of the barbarism of the Cardassians and the Klingons. And so when you see the Terran Empire, they're really not all that different than what surrounds them. And so their militarism, their harshness is a response to what's all around them, which, you know, the Klingons, the Cardassians, these really, you know, just even worse groups. It goes to show that how different this universe is. You know, in our universe, the Romulans and the Klingons and the Cardassians, they're not necessarily the nicest people, but they're not like bloodthirsty, killing, you know, amoral freaks, you know. And so I liked that they kind of explained this is why the Terran Empire is like this, because they're creating themselves in response to what they've found when they've gone out into the universe.
Yeah. Well, and that's the struggle everyone faces. Again, to look at the world today, I mean, that's a struggle that the U.S. and other countries face with the threat of terrorism and, you know, other rogue states, you know, threats from North Korea, for example, where you feel like your security is threatened and then you take steps and you do things that maybe go against your principles, but you're doing it in response to another threat because you feel like that's what you have to do. And keeping that in check is very, very difficult. And, you know, when you look back at history, you can see, and in the, you know, future generations will look back at the time we're living in now, and they'll see how all this actually played out. And it's tough, but that's a realistic approach to life, and it makes sense that that's why the Terran Empire would be the way it is. And it's nice to hear that explained instead of just in the mirror universe, humans are brutal and they kill everybody. You know, that's, you know, the opening to Enterprise in A Mirror Darkly, a lot of people love that opening sequence. And I think it's fun and it's creative and all, but it does kind of portray the idea that humans just succumbed to warfare and they took to the stars and they went to conquer the galaxy. And there's no background behind why they're doing it.
Yeah, and you're right in some ways, but the other thing that I think it does really well is just say that everybody in this galaxy was bent towards that instead of, you know, looking for a peaceful resolution, that, you know, everyone in this galaxy was just really bad. they're bent towards war and hate and all these things, whereas, you know, and you would say maybe in our universe we're not as much, but I don't know if that's even the case. Because as we talked about, I think on one of the Ready Rooms, when we did the mirror universe, maybe the mirror universe is really just a mirror for ourselves. It's not really so much a mirror to another universe. It's just the ugliness that we don't want to talk about.
Right. And sexiness that we do want to talk about.
Exactly. Yes. So true, Chris. So true.
Well, let's talk about the actual episodes just briefly here, just to set up, you know, what the stories were. There were 5 Mirror Universe episodes on Deep Space Nine, although only 4 of them were set in the Mirror Universe, because Resurrection actually takes place in the Prime Universe as the Mirror Universe version of Vedic Baral comes to the station. And the first one was Crossover, which we've been talking about, where Kira and Bashir accidentally end up in the Mirror Universe as they go through the wormhole. And this was the only time that the wormhole was used to get our characters back and forth between the Mirror Universe. And it was nice, you know, TOS used lightning, and so DS9 used the wormhole. It was a perfect plot device for DS9. And that gets them there. And then there's Through the Looking Glass, where Sisko has to go over. And this was a good episode for Sisko because he's confronted with Jennifer. And so, you know, it makes it a tough situation for him because he's already had to cope with her death once. And even though this woman is not actually his wife, it's not Jennifer, she looks just like Jennifer, and he would have to see her die a second time. So that's tough for him. Then there's a shattered mirror where Jennifer comes over and she wants Sisko to come over and help her in the mirror universe as they build another Defiant. And this one was interesting, right? Because were you the same, Matthew, when you're watching this, where Smiley comes over, he downloads all these records from the computer, then they go back and they actually build a Defiant?
Yeah, I thought that that was awesome. They have the wherewithal to be like, okay, we don't have what we need to be able to do all this, to figure all this out, so we'll just go steal it from that other universe. They've got all this stuff. So,
but the idea that they could actually build that ship was I don't know, it was interesting. It was interesting to me. Like, in our universe, they had actually go through the process of developing that ship and have all kinds of problems with it. And,
yeah, that's true.
And then over here, Smiley and his guys, they just build one.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I guess if you have the right blueprints, you know, and you know Starship design enough, it's really not that hard to build one. I thought it was funny that they also run into the same exact problems that we do in the Prime universe with the Defiant, and they don't have Chief O'Brien to figure it out for them. So they need, you know, they steal Sisko.
Yeah. Yeah, so they did address the fact that the ship is overpowered. Yeah,
exactly.
I like this episode that the Defiant itself looks unfinished.
Yes.
You know, it looks like someone got, it's like a kit car. It's kind of like a kit ship where they just kind of threw it together and they haven't finished painting it yet. And it's just kind of not quite right.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. It always reminds me a little bit of the, you know, the second Death Star. It's not quite finished. It's right. You know, but it's still operational. So, yeah. And somebody just yells, "It's a trap!"
Your goal is to get that catchphrase into every episode of Trek FM shows these days.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it. It's a tough road, but somebody's got to do it. So
somebody's got to do it. Then there's Resurrection, which I mentioned, where Baral comes back. It's the mirror. Baral comes over and seeks refuge in our universe from the mirror universe. And then there's the Emperor's New Cloak in the final season, where Grand Nagus Zek is kidnapped by the Klingon-Cardassian alliance while he's, get this, on a business trip into the mirror universe. Huh? What?
There's profit everywhere, Chris. So
it's profit everywhere.
Even in the mirror
universe.
Looking
for those opportunities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the galaxy isn't big enough. Let's go to a completely different alternate universe.
I can't wait until the next JJ movie where the very young Grand Nagus Zek, where he's not yet a Grand Nagus, goes over into the alternate J.J. Abrams universe to seek profit.
Oh, that'll be good. I'm looking forward to that as well, Chris.
So which of these episodes was your favorite Mirror Universe episode?
You know, I always liked Shattered Mirror a lot. I really thought that was a good episode. I thought it took all the things that they had done and really built on in the first two episodes and did a great job of creating a very interesting story. Also, just, too, moving forward the story of the Mirror Universe itself, what's happening there, the rebellion, all of those things. To me, I felt like that was the best episode of the bunch.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite as well. I think that was a point where the concept had been fleshed out enough that the story was very interesting, and it hadn't yet gone too crazy with the way it had done by The Emperor's New Cloak, which is still a fun episode, but you have to admit that they're kind of just going all out with the craziness of the Mirror Universe at that point.
Yeah, that one was definitely fun. Of course, I get to see Ezri a little bit hipster, a little bit biker hipster thing.
Okay,
it's
since
awesome.
You bring that up.
Biker hipster Ezri.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Since you bring that up, I was saving this for when we talk about the characters, but because we did talk about Ezri in a cocktail dress previously on the Orb, this is the next installment in our Ezri in series, and it's Ezri in leather.
Yeah. What Ezri, Ezri in leather? Hipster biker garb. It's fantastic. I love it. Maybe a little bit too much eye makeup, but otherwise, just a really well done outfit for her. And I don't know how any red-blooded male all across the world could complain with that look. And so, to me, much better, than the intendant. Personally, I don't need the intendant. She's too much. I'll just take Ezri.
Even the intendant couldn't resist Ezri in leather.
That is true, actually. I thought it was funny that Ezri's first kiss on Deep Space Nine was with the intendant. So
that's right.
Yeah.
At least the first one we know about, anyway.
Look, yeah, it's true.
All right. Well, what did you think about Nicole DeBoer's portrayal of Ezri as that different kind of character?
You know, I thought it was good. I really thought that she did a fine job of playing a character that's just kind of mean and sullen and sulky and, you know, very different than Ezri. She's willing to do whatever she has to do. And yet then at the end, like so many of the Mir characters, she has a heart of gold. So I enjoyed it. I think that's one of the things about the Mir universe, Chris, is that, you know, so many of the characters are different. And yet, they're really not all that different when you look at it.
Right, yeah. And that's the next topic. And while we're talking about Nicole, she said afterwards that she really loved doing that episode, and she wishes that she could play that Ezri all the time.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been a much different character, for sure, if they had her be more like that than what she was, which was kind of the unsure girl next door that you get. Yeah. And so
it would have been hard for Julian to choose between Mirror Jadzia Ezri.
Although, you know, I think that in some ways in the novelizations after the series is that Ezri becomes much more of a confident person and has some of those characteristics of the Mirror Universe Ezri more so than she does, you know, in the series. So,
So let's talk about the alter egos then. And Ezri's a good example here that the characters in the Mirror Universe, you know, some of them have their own unique personalities. Some of them are drastic departures from the characters that we know. Some of them are the same, you know, like O'Brien and Smiley. I've always felt were pretty much the same guy. He's very consistent as a person. And then some of them had traits that I think were there inside them, and they're bubbling to the surface in the Mirror Universe. And Ezri is a case there where I think you see that confidence and such that she has inside her that is subdued normally, but we're seeing it kind of bubble to the surface here.
Yeah, one of the characters that specifically was thinking about that's very similar they were talking about was just Jadzia, and that Jadzia is more sexualized. But they said, you know, if there wasn't such a taboo in the Prime universe, Jadzia would probably be somebody who is very free to be with whoever she wanted. You know, she already does have quite a reputation as getting around.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. She's already like that. Actually, we just don't see it in the episodes. We just get references like some guy leaving her quarters while she's in a tower.
Right.
And
or just talking about Captain Baudet or, you know, whoever, you know, that was an old lover of hers. So, she tends to get around like a record. But in the Mirror universe, we just actually see her go around on the turntable.
I think if Deep Space Nine were produced today, Jadzia, the normal Jadzia, the Prime timeline Jadzia, Prime universe Jadzia, would probably be more like that.
Yeah, I definitely, if you were producing a show like that today, she would be much more physically provocative in every single way.
And you think about, think about Battlestar Galactica, you know, about how Starbuck is, for example.
Yeah.
I think Jadzia would have probably been a bit more like
Starbuck. I think that Starbuck and Jadzia are the same person. They're the same kind of character. Starbuck is just the nth degree. Exactly.
I think so. Then you see like Bashir, for example. I feel like with Bashir in the Mirror Universe, we're seeing that internal, because, you know, the genetically enhanced person who knows he's better than everyone else and has that attitude, but Jules, our Jules, keeps it in check. But in the mirror universe, it's just all out there.
Yeah, that is one of the things about that I like about Bashir getting to just kind of be the arrogant jerk that he wants to be all the time, or I guess that he kind of fights in the beginning seasons. In the mirror universe, he just gets to be that. And that had to be fun for Alexander to play. Just letting loose and just being kind of an arrogant... Yeah, yeah, we won't say that word here. It's a family show.
Yeah, and he gets Jadzia.
Exactly. Which, so. Good for him, so...
Who else do you have thoughts on in the mirror universe? You know, the mirror character versus the prime character?
You know, obviously, you have to talk about Kira and the Intendant. I mean, it's... I do love, really, how Nana plays her, and that what I thought was most interesting in doing a bunch of reading on the episodes and the background for the episodes is that Nana really feels like she's much more like the Intendant in real life than she does feels like she's Kira, which, I don't know, that sounds like it'd be kind of fun to meet Nana in real life.
She's such a good actress because... I mean, she's playing like two really different roles, and there are even scenes where both sides of that character are talking to one another, and she pulls it off so well.
Well, and two, just the physicality of the way that she plays the character. You know, yeah. She just changes a few things, and just it accentuates the sensuality of the character so much, but then it really just changes everything about her, and I think it's just really interesting to watch how you can just change a few different things with a character and with a portrayal and get a completely different type of person on screen.
Now, O'Brien, I mentioned a minute ago, I felt is pretty much the same character in both universes. I don't know, do you agree with me on that? And what I mean by that is I feel like... remember when we did our Miles show and we called him Atlas with a smile? You know, it's like everyone likes Miles. Miles will always go out of his way to help people. He's just a good person and he's an ordinary person. And I feel like Smiley is the same. Like Smiley, he's watching out for himself, but, you know, he's trying to be helpful. If he sees an opportunity to do something to change the situation and make it better for people, he will. But in both cases, I feel like he is that same ordinary guy, good person. And I think he has, for me anyway, probably the least change between the two sides.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's interesting that, you know, the Smiley that we get really needs a push from the Bashir and the Prime Universe to kind of move him towards being more like the Chief O'Brien that we know. And he's a little bit gruffer and a little more rough around the edges, but really he is the same person. And I really,
yeah,
I think it's okay for everybody not to be so different. It just makes it more interesting of a place to be if everybody's not a cookie cutter. Oh, I'm just the evil version. It doesn't
right.
really make sense.
You don't
sense.
Want him to yeah. just be the flip, you know, the opposite. Like everything that you do is opposite. I think O'Brien, Smiley, needs that push because he's been beaten down so much.
Right, exactly.
It's in him. It just needs to come to the surface, and so he needs that push. Now, what Aaron Eisenberg had to say about Mirror Nog was really interesting. He said that Mirror Nog was obnoxious and rude, so I played him like an edgy quark.
That
did you
part,
get edgy quark?
Yeah, that part I loved because I could actually see it. You know, if you just took quark and you just made him just a little bit more just on edge, I really like that. You can definitely see that. It's got to be fun to take little old Nog, who's always the good guy, and really play that up in yeah. the Mirror Universe. That's got to be fun.
And who have we missed here? Odo, I think, is just Odo, because I think the Odo of our universe would do the same things the Mirror Odo is doing if he found himself in that situation where that's what he was supposed to do. Because we know his history of working on the station
right.
as
right.
the Cardassians. I think that Odo just adapts himself to the situation.
Yeah. Well, and part of the way Odo turns out really has to do with who he was raised by, like Dr. Mora. And even though they have such a hard history, he really takes on the Bajoran outlook a little bit in his life, that his sense of right and wrong and everything kind of come from that. His sense of justice are formed more by that. And you can tell that this Odo has been in a place where he's had absolutely nobody pour any goodness into him whatsoever. So he's just looking out for himself.
Yeah. And then there's Sisko, who we talked a little bit about earlier. And I think the mirror Sisko, when we get to see him, is the personality traits about Sisko that we've talked about on here before. I guess we talked about last week, even when we talked about how he handled Eddington with the Maquis. I think you see those traits just being at the surface in the mirror Sisko.
Yeah, I like that the mirror Sisko gets to be that kind of cockier, more brash person. The kind of person, it reminds me a little bit of when you see Benjamin in the beginning of Emissary. He's going up to Jennifer on the beach and he's very sure of himself. It reminds me of that guy. Like, he's never kind of outgrown that cocksureness that he had. He's never had that beaten out of him at all. And he's allowed that to turn him into, or continue to be, a ladies' man. So
he's a little bit like Avery playing piano.
Oh, we always have to come back to the piano.
Yeah. But don't you think? Don't you get that, though?
He's yeah. He's manic. I mean, he's just, you're never really... you're just not sure what's going to happen.
Yeah. Who else? Worf, I think... I mean, Worf is kind of like, okay, let's make him the ruthless Klingon. But I don't know. I mean... Do you think that Worf is displaying traits that he has inside and coming to the surface? Or do you think that's just like, instead of him being the good Starfleet officer, let's put him in the situation where he's kind of the leader of the Alliance and he's going to go and kill everybody?
I get the feeling that, I mean, and I was just reading in this, and they wanted him to be more like Gowron. To play him more like that. So that kind of devious, underhanded Klingon who's willing to do anything to get ahead. He does not care. This one is even less honorable than Gowron. And so I think that that was well done in giving Worf and to Michael Dorn just something different to play. And he's very funny. He's got great timing. So that all works really well when they are able to get Worf on finally.
I have to say one thing in watching when he's sitting in his captain's chair and he's got Garrick there on the chain next to his captain's chair. I am so glad that they didn't put Garrick in the Princess Leia slave girl outfit.
Oh.
As he has her, you know, tied alongside, as he has him tied alongside there.
Wow, that would have been a much different show. Yeah, I don't even know what to say to that one because none of it's good. That's a good call for the writers and also just the costume designers. We don't need to see Andrew Robinson in that outfit.
Definitely not. And as for Garrick, I guess we got to see Garrick being, you never know who Garrick is, right? But deep down inside, I think it's completely plausible that even in the Prime Universe, this is a path that Garrick would have taken, and he would have probably savored the opportunity to be the right hand of the intendant like this.
Yeah. It was interesting, though, reading that Andrew Robinson does not like the characterization. He finds him just weak, and he was saying he just really didn't like that he's just so ineffectual, and which I can understand that, but I guess it makes more sense to have him be a little bit more like that than just be Garrick in the mirror universe. I mean, because our Garrick is always on top of things and always three steps ahead of everybody else. And, you know, it's nicer to have this Garrick not be like that.
Well, that leads us to another topic, two other topics. One is there a different path that we think they should have gone down in the Mirror Universe? Because I think most fans like the Mirror Universe. I've heard some fans say that they felt like they should have done something else with the Mirror Universe, and I don't really know what that is. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't really have anything that I'm unhappy with about the Mirror Universe, because I don't take it too seriously. It's just kind of a fun look. It's a chance to see the characters as they could have been. But is there anything that you've ever thought of as you're watching where you thought that this was the wrong path to go down in terms of the writing? They should have gone down this other path?
You know, I think for me, and I think I'm probably just like you, when it comes to the Mirror Universe, I take everything with a grain of salt. You know, the whole point is to be able to do pretty much whatever you want to do, so there's no right or wrong. You know, whether or not I like it or not is just, Quark died, you know. That's funny. We can kill Quark because this is the Mirror Universe. Oh, look, Odo died the first time we see him in the Mirror Universe. You know, it's all those kind of things can happen, and I don't really feel like anything's wasted because it creates for a fun, unexpected experience when you're watching the show. And yeah, I can't really think of anything that I would say, this should really have changed in the Mirror Universe. Who cares? It's the Mirror Universe. We're just there to have a good time. We're not there to, like, create, you know, epic story.
Yeah. So the other related topic here is the question of whether or not the Mirror Universe could sustain itself as a series, because there are fans who would love to see the Mirror Universe as a Star Trek series. So I call it Star Trek MU. Got that little, you know, CSI flair. But I don't know. Do you think that there's enough there in the Mirror Universe that it would interest you to see seven seasons of the Mirror Universe?
Well, you know, they were able to write some relatively good books based around the Mirror Universe with all the different characters and how everything interacts. I think that was interesting and well done. As to whether it's a series or not, I think the problem is that Star Trek Mirror Universe or Star Trek MU, you have to know the Prime Universe for any of it to really make sense, because everything's built off everything that's happened in the Prime Universe and you twisting it. And so this isn't a Star Trek show then that anybody could just jump into and watch and not necessarily have to know, you know, what came before. And one of the nice things is you don't have to know The Next Generation to watch Deep Space Nine or Voyager. You don't have to know the original series to watch any of them. You know, you don't. This, though, you really need to know all those things to actually make it work. So I think it would have made a pretty bad TV show on its own.
Okay. Yeah, I think that. That's a good point. Yeah, the ability to get into the show, like, could you just jump into it? But even for Star Trek fans who know all the background history, I guess if you were going to do the Mirror Universe as a series, it would have to be done the way DS9 is doing it. It would have to be written in the way that DS9 is written, or as we mentioned earlier, you know, Battlestar Galactica. It has to be that type. It would have to be very dark. And some of the things that they do in here, just for fun with the characters, they wouldn't be able to do because those things work. You know, like Quark in here, for example, works fine just as a one-off. But to actually develop the character, you'd have to stay away from some of the more cliched elements. But I guess, like, if you did it as a really serialized show, you could probably do it for at least four seasons anyway. It might work. Yeah. If you tried to do it as a kind of a TNG style Star Trek series, but it was all set in the Mirror Universe, I don't think it would ever work at all.
Yeah, not at all.
I think, like, Enterprises in a Mirror Darkly could, you know, that story could have continued for a while. It would have been interesting to see what happened with Empress Hoshi and with the Empire moving forward as they got that futuristic technology in their hands. But even then, yeah, I don't know if you can make a whole series out of that, but it's an interesting thing to think about, and I can understand why some fans are interested in the idea. So, any final thoughts on the Mirror Universe, Matthew?
I just think, Chris, that when it comes to the Mirror Universe and what Deep Space Nine did with it, it was kind of the perfect fit to have the Deep Space Nine crew end up in the Mirror Universe. One of the things, too, that I really like about it is that it does really help connect the original series and Deep Space Nine together. And you can just tell that the writers and even the actors and everyone involved really has a reverence for the original series. And I think that it adds a specialness to Deep Space Nine that it's the only series that gets to be in the Mirror Universe. And I think that they do it fantastically. Even their last episode, you're right, it's silly. They kind of really are throwing everything they can into it. It's a little bit goofy by the end. But I think it all just really works. And I think what it does is just add some great levity, some good humor to the show. And at the same time, I never really feel like, hey, we just need to have some fun, so we're going to go to the Mirror Universe, but we're not actually going to advance that storyline. I do feel like that they always have a good purpose for being there in the Mirror Universe, for telling us a story that advances what's happening there, as well as just our own characters crossing over.
Yeah, I agree. It was the perfect fit for DS9. I think that they found a good balance in terms of how they used it. You know, we get one episode in season 2, we get one in season 3, one in 4. Then we don't get one in the 5th season. In the 6th season, we get Resurrection, which takes place in the Prime Universe, as we mentioned. And then we get the final episode in season 7. So, you know, roughly once a year, they went over and they did a little story here. And so that was nice. You know, it never felt like a gimmick or anything. It was just a nice little enhancement to the stories that we had. So I've always enjoyed it. I've always appreciated, as you said, that DS9 does have a reverence for the original series, and the writers were able to connect to Star Trek's past in a way that was fun and in a way that, you know, added onto it as well. And it didn't feel so fanboyish like In a Mirror Darkly did. And so I appreciated that as well. So I really enjoyed the Mirror Universe quite a lot. Well, Matthew, it's been a lot of fun talking about the Mirror Universe, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about this week on Trek FM. So here are some other things that you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, the Orb.
The Maquis.
But then he tells Eddington, I'm going to do this to all the other Maquis planets as well. And it's, you don't F with the Sisko, is basically what we get to here.
Do not frack with the Sisko.
Exactly.
The Ready Room.
The Q and the Gray.
Well, there's kind of two sides to his guide to romance, though, because while we do see his futile attempts with Catherine Janeway, there's also the interaction he has with the female Q, which I found be much more interesting.
Deck 8.
STO Foundry, Alpha Flight.
And it's quite light. The main thing is you get to fly around, test your flying skills, and test your ability to withstand combat.
I think we failed in that sort of
thing. But let's just ignore that.
To the journey!
Life on Voyager.
Well, I'm just saying, there was a certain, you know, there was a time period when the Doctor was, you know, like a Ken doll. So that's all I'm saying.
I would not be a Ken doll. Let's put it that way.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Hell House.
And I think that this book largely is about how sexual indulgences can get lumped in together with a lot of other forms of transgression, moral and ethical and personal.
Warp 5.
T-Paul.
Certainly she'd always had a dry humour all of the way through. We saw that more probably from season 2 onwards. And if we think about the sensuality and the feline movements from, as well as she's described it, then I don't think we really saw that until she started to explore her emotions more.
Trek News and Views.
Blood Oath and Michael and Sarah.
Obviously it has Dax in it, so win. But the one thing that DS9 has done for me has it's given me a greater appreciation of Klingons.
Literary Treks.
Nero Comics.
This place feels terrible and horrible, and such a good job, I think, by the artist to really create a sense of
capturing that,
a menace into this place. Like, you don't want to be at Rurapente. It really does feel like the alien's graveyard.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all those shows. You can find them everywhere you get your podcasts, in iTunes, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zoom, download from the website. We have many, many different ways for you to get the shows, and you can find links to everything by going to trek.fm/pd for podcast directory. And we have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week. Some days we even have two shows, so go check them out and enjoy Trek even more. Now, Matthew, the last couple of weeks, we've been able to share some reviews that we've had on iTunes, and this week we have a really great review in the U.S. iTunes store by Liquid Cross. And Liquid Cross says that the prophets would be pleased and left us 5 stars. And I'm not going to read the entire review here, but Liquid Cross says that he really appreciates he or she, again, we don't know, they're liquid. We don't know. Could be a man. Could be a woman. We just know they're liquid. But they really appreciate the fact that we go all over the map talking about different characters and story arcs and production notes, and that it shakes things up. It keeps the show from ever being boring. And, you know, there are other podcasts if you want to just follow through episode by episode. But they really appreciate that we look at the larger picture of Deep Space Nine, because as so many people tell us, that's really the best way to look at this series, because it is such a rich series. So they also said that thanks to the Orb, they want to go and watch DS9 again, all over again. And so we're really happy that we could do that. And also, Matthew, I hadn't really thought about this, but Liquid Cross says that there's a bonus drinking game for the Orb. Do you know about this?
That I don't know about, Chris, but tell me, because I'm going to go get some alcohol right now, and we'll see how this goes.
Okay, well, apparently the Orb drinking game goes like this. You knock one back every time I tell an anecdote about Japan, and you knock another one back, Matthew, every time that you make a really cheesy joke.
Awesome. This is this is going to be a really, really good night.
Right. So the Ready Room has the barrel roll drinking game, the Jeffrey Combs drinking game, and we have Japanese anecdotes and cheesy jokes. So
I love it.
There we are. So thanks, Liquid Cross, for that great review. We really appreciate the kind words. And if you'd like to leave a review for us, please do drop by iTunes. It only takes about 30 seconds. You can leave a star rating. You can leave a written review. We'd love to hear from you, and it helps other DS9 fans find the Orb as they search iTunes. So thank you for all that. If you'd like to send us a message, you can do that by going to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Orb, and that will come to Matthew and me by email. We also have forums where you can talk with other listeners and the Trek FM crew. Those are at trek.fm/forums. There's a section there for the Orb and one for DS9. And also, in terms of social media, if you are on Facebook, you can go to facebook.com/trekfm. And you'll always find us on Twitter tweeting away about Star Trek and Deep Space Nine all the time under username TrekFM. Now, Matthew, if someone would like to talk to either you or your Mirror Universe counterpart, where should they go?
Well, Chris, you can go to Twitter, MattRushing02. We both answer that one. It's a little confusing sometimes. Usually, if it's the Mirror counterpart, he puts a little D at the end. So hopefully that'll clear up any confusion finally. If he'll just finally start doing that, it'd be great.
All right.
And then, of course, you can check me out on my own blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not hanging out serving the intendant on your hands and knees, where can we find you?
Usually I'm with Esri, Mirror Esri. No, that's not what you want to know, right? No, I'm on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username. And like you, Matthew, I have my own website as well. That's at cbrianjones.com. And I do talk about things not related to Star Trek, as hard as it is for everyone to believe. It really does happen. And also, Matthew, you know, you and I do another show on the network together, Literary Treks, where we talk about Star Trek books and comics. You can find that every Sunday. And you can also find me with Kate Walsh every Friday on Warp 5, where we talk about Enterprise. And every Tuesday on The Ready Room, where we talk about all five live-action Star Trek series, the movies, other topics, Star Trek news. We have a lot of fun. Sometimes you're there with me, Matthew. Also, I'm joined by many hosts from all over the network and special guests. So you can find me over there as well. One more thing, Matthew, before we let everyone go, we'd like to ask you to please support our sponsors for this week's show. Your support of our sponsors is very important to helping us bring the Orb to you every week. First, there's Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, an online store, really anything you can imagine. Trek FM is built on Squarespace. My personal website is, my company website is, and I build client websites there as well. I've been doing it for about 6 years now. I love it. I know you're going to love it as well. Go create your own space today. I promise you, you're going to be really impressed with the tools. Go to squarespace.com for your free 14-day trial. There's no credit card required. Try it free. And then when you sign up, use offer code TREK8 to save 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. And we thank Squarespace for their support of The Orb and Trek FM. Also, please visit trekfan.org. Now, we all love to sit around and talk about Star Trek, but if we really want to get to that Star Trek future, we really need to do more. And Trek Fan is, you know, it's not just a fan club. It's really an adventure that you get to embark upon with fellow fans, where you'll collaborate to solve puzzles and complete real-life mission objectives. And along the way, you'll win great prizes. So turn your love for Star Trek into something that can help us move towards that Star Trek future. Support us, support Trek Fan by going to trekfan.org, solve that first puzzle, and take the next step on your adventure. And we thank Trek Fan as well for their support of The Orb. And lastly, if you would personally like to support the network and our programming, visit trek.fm/donate. We have 8 new alien-themed badges as a thank you for your contributions, and they're perfect for your shirt, for your bag, for your wartime gray Deep Space Nine uniform. They're 44mm badges with original illustrations by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. We also have A5 size art prints of these aliens now as well. They're much larger views than you get on the buttons. And you can choose if you want buttons or if you want art prints. There are different levels of donations for you to choose from. Go to trek.fm/donate, and your contributions help us cover the costs of production, storage, and bandwidth that's needed to bring The Orb to you every week.
We'd like to thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.